Live from Utrecht, this is Bitcoin
Explained.
Sjors, we're back.
Woohoo!
I know what you've been waiting for. It's my voice of an angel. It's time for Sjors Stacks Sets.
OMG. So, we have a couple, but they're not super distinct. One says from Farscapian, 32,000 sats. You guys are the best. Well, that's always nice. And we have one that says the boost didn't work. Your note loses. And then they tried again. And then it did work. So the problem is I run
It doesn't work. How did you get it?
Yeah.
How can you read it?
So there's a difference between sending the boost and it actually... And I think... Yeah, what happens is the boost is split. So part of it goes to me, most of it, and then 1% or so goes to the Fountain app, probably, depending on what podcast player is working. And it's not atomic. So the 1% to Fountain app will work, but if the payment to me doesn't work, then they only paid 1%, but they got to say their boost.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So that's not ideal. Ideally, it should completely work or completely
fail. It should
fail.
Be atomic, yeah.
But, it's all new. And the problem is because I run my own node, like, not everybody is able to make a payment to my node, and so they might fail.
Right. Okay. Sjors, stacked, set. Sjors, today we're going to discuss Milksad.
Milksad.
So, Milksad is... What is Milksad?
Well, it's the first two words of a very, very unsafe mnemonic.
Yes, and...
It's also the name of the working name of a security disclosure that was in progress.
Well, for the same reason.
Yes. Well, yeah, they found the security bug, which is related to this Milksad, and they needed a working name for it, and they picked this working name, and I guess it stuck.
Right. And it has to do with Libitcoin. So I'm not sure if this is the right way to put it. I guess that's what we're going to get on... in this episode, is it a bug in Libitcoin? Is that what it is?
Well, there seems to be a difference of opinion as to whether it's a bug or not. It's certainly a way to use Libitcoin such that you lose money.
But someone published a CVE about it.
Yes.
That's for sure. So what's a CVE?
Yeah, so a CVE is a... I forgot what the word stands for, but it has... I think it's like vulnerability... blah, blah, blah. It's basically a public list of known security issues.
Right. So there was a security issue with Libitcoin. Is that, I guess that would be a pretty objective, fair way to put it then?
I definitely think so. I mean, one other way you could put it is like it's a security vulnerability involving Libitcoin. That kind of leaves it open of whose fault it is. And it is a bit complicated.
Right. In any case... Something happened, and we're gonna talk about it.
Yeah,
and,
so something.
And it
happened.
Has to do with Libitcoin. That one is for sure. It has something to do with Libitcoin.
That's right.
Or is there still new ones left there? No, this definitely has something to do with Libitcoin. So, what is Libitcoin, Sjors? Let's start there.
It's a library that is able to. It does a bunch of things. One of the things it's able to do is, it's a node, so it can sync the whole Bitcoin blockchain. But it's also a collection of tools that you can use without using the node. For example, to create a wallet or to do to do blockchain exploration stuff, I think.
Yeah, so it's a software library.
Yes.
It's not an actual library. I get.
Yeah, definitely not an actual library.
And so it was quite popular.
I think it peaked sort of in 2015 when most people were working on it. I think it was at the time also used for certain stealth wallet projects.
Yeah, it was started by Amir Taki, and it was sort of the first non-Bitcoin core implementation of Bitcoin. And then at some point, Amir himself used it for Dark Wallet, which was sort of the first really privacy-focused Bitcoin wallet, which is now defunct. So, but it's basically a collection of tools that you can use if you're building Bitcoin applications or anything. If you're writing Bitcoin software, you can take stuff from the Libitcoin library, right? Is that a good summary?
Exactly. And when I say it peaked is because if you look at GitHub, you can see a history of when there was most of the activity, most of the commits, etc. And that really was many, many, many years ago. And over the last years, it has been somewhat maintained, but not super actively.
Right.
So yeah, right now, if you wanted to pick a library to use for any Bitcoin project, you may want to look for other projects.
Yeah, right now, Eric Foscow is the lead maintainer of Libitcoin. He took over from Amir, I think, in 2015.
Yeah, that's a long time ago, too.
Yeah, and when you say it was at its peak, so it sounds like what you mean is peak of development activity.
Yeah.
Not necessarily usage.
Usage, we don't know.
Yeah, right.
Other than from this book, bug, which might give some indication, but it's like not even the main usage of it, so it doesn't really say anything.
Okay, now... Well, you just call it a bug. So you think it's a bug, Shors?
Yeah,
I think so. How are we going to call it during the episode, throughout the rest of the episode? Bug?
Either a bug or an extremely poorly named command.
Okay, we're just going to call it a bug then. I think that's an easy word to use. I think Eric Foscow will not be happy with that, but I think that's the word we're going to use. So what is this bug? What's the bug?
Okay, so basically there's a command called bxseed, where bx is the name of the computer program, the library, and seed says, well, what do you think that command means?
I think it means a Bitcoin seed, but I don't know what the command itself does.
Yeah, so it basically generates a Bitcoin seed.
Right.
Except that it does so in an extremely insecure way, and then... Somewhere in the documentation was some wording that you might, if you read it, means don't use this, but not really.
Okay, wait.
So basically, it generates a seed, but the problem is the seed is based on an insecure pseudo-random number generator.
Let me break this down to see if I understand correctly. So Libitcoin is a Bitcoin library. So there's all kinds of different parts of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think it has commands to change, say, if you start with a seed, it has maybe a way to turn it into a private key or in a public key or in an address or
yeah, you, make a you're writing a software application and you say, I need this Bitcoin. I need to check if blocks are valid. Well, maybe that's a very big thing, but well, yeah, I need to do something. Let's get it from this library. And if I'm understanding you correctly, one of the things you could get from this library is... I need to generate a seed.
Yes.
Okay, so that was the specific thing that was in the library, or that was the name of the specific thing in the library.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you would put it in your software if you needed to.
I don't know if people would put it in the software. They would just type the commands as they were creating their own, as they were manually processing something in Bitcoin.
Right. I mean, this is where my lack of, I've never developed like a wallet or anything else. So I'm still sort of struggling with how libraries work. But
yeah, in this case, I think a library is generally something that's used by another computer program. And I think in this case, I think this is more like a tool set. It's like a bunch of commands, utilities that you as a user would manually use to process something. So you just type something like, well, this command.
Okay, the entire library is on your computer, and then it sort of some other software program you're using sort of refers to that library.
Or you yourself refer to it.
Yeah. Or you yourself, yeah. And then it sort of goes to the library and uses that.
Yeah.
Am I saying it right? Okay, so now I understand that part, I think. And this thing in this library was sort of specifically labeled generate a seed.
Well, it was labeled seed.
It was labeled seed. Okay.
It wasn't labeled super unsafe seed, don't use this.
Right. Right. Okay. Then the next question is why... So you're saying it was super unsafe to use. So why was it super unsafe to use?
Yeah. And the nuance there is that it started out as probably reasonably safe and it became unsafe later on. So we'll get into, I guess, in the history of that. But the unsafety lies in that there's only... 2 to the power 32 possible seeds that it can generate. So about 4 billion different seeds that it can generate, which is not a lot. Normally, your seed will have 128 bits in it, which is 2 to the power 128. That is probably more possible seeds than the number of molecules in the universe, which I think is like 10 to the power 100. Anyway... But in this case, it only generates 4 billion possible seeds. And then if you know that given a seed, so given the 12 words or 24 words, you know how to get to the first normal Bitcoin address, right? You do a bunch of derivations. Then you can basically take every possible seed and calculate the first address and the first private key of that address and just look at the blockchain and see if there's coins there.
So that would take probably
a couple hours on a laptop.
On a regular laptop, you can. All right. So
and then if you want to be a little bit more sophisticated, let's say you want to find the first 100 addresses, maybe it takes a few days, but.
Okay. So to spell out the problem, it would basically mean that anyone can just calculate any Bitcoin address that anyone could have possibly generated using
that this command.
Right. And this is what happened recently, I think.
So what's interesting is that, so it was discovered because some people lost their money very suddenly and they talked to some security experts and there were two different people. And it turned out when they looked at how they made their wallet originally, they were using that command.
To be clear, I mean, this is obvious probably to anyone listening, but this is basically the worst thing that can be in any Bitcoin wallet.
It falls in a yeah. So these would probably be people who made their own wallet, right? Not people using a normal wallet software out there, but they thought, hey, I'm going to try and make my own wallet. I'm going to make my own keys. Maybe they used the hardware wallet, and they didn't trust the hardware wallet itself to generate a reliable random number, and so they would use this tool to create the seed, and then they would manually enter the seed into the hardware wallet. I think the case that the article demonstrates was from somebody who did that. Like they had an air-gapped computer, so they knew pretty sure that that whatever seed was generated was not exposed to the internet, and they manually entered it into a hardware wallet and then nuked the air-gapped computer.
Right. Okay.
But if your seed is unsafe, then it doesn't matter that you use a hardware wallet.
Yeah, exactly. That's why this is the worst thing that can be in a Bitcoin wallet.
And these things have happened in the past in different variations, right? There was the problem of brain wallets, for example, where people would just randomly pick a few words and there's just not enough words. People are not good enough at really creating random words. And so people will automatically, anytime somebody comes up with that same idea, somebody will automatically sweep the blockchain. Now, specifically here, this was most similar to something that happened to Trust Wallet. Trust Wallet, as you understand, is a wallet you should trust and definitely not verify. And so people did trust it. And so what happened there is they were using, again, they were using this insecure random number generator. I think it was called Twist. I forgot which Twist. And that was pretty much the exact same mistake as what was happening in LibBitcoin.
But not the same thing. It wasn't LibBitcoin they used, right?
No, exactly. Trust did not use LibBitcoin. They just used the same random number generator.
Not random.
Yeah, but it's a pseudo random number generator. So the idea of a pseudo random number generator is that it produces numbers that look random, but fundamentally they're not random. And that's not necessarily bad. Computers sometimes do that, but not with 32 bits.
Okay.
But the thing is, if you use with Trust Wallet, basically the same idea, somebody could guess all the private keys in Ledger Dojo, the organization within Ledger did that.
Right.
But because the, so it uses the same algorithm, but with a slight difference in how it's applied to the seed eventually. And that's why, even though it's the same mistake, the LibBitcoin coins were not found in that way. Because I think it was something like you use the first part of the seed instead of the last part of the seed, something like that.
Okay, so let's get into... first of all, let's just get into the background now, I think. Mm-hmm. So what is... Because you said there's a lot of nuance in the background, or it used to be secure and then it wasn't?
Yeah, so one of the things is that this command was changed. So maybe we first want to explain why people were using this in the first place, because that is part of the problem. There's the book called Mastering Bitcoin, which is pretty good. But it had, I think inside the chapter that was explaining how addresses worked, it also showed some commands of how to make a private key. And one way to make a private key is using Bitcoin Core. And then the second one is, you can also use this other tool, which is the LibBitcoin or its predecessor. And this was published in 2014, I think, because it was in the second edition of the book. And at the time, this command seemed to be still safe.
You mean the Libitcoin version that was in the book?
It was, or at least reasonably safe. I think they're still investigating. That might not have been perfectly safe either, but not as unsafe as it is now.
Okay, who's investigating that, and why was it maybe not even safe back then? Do you know this?
So the Milksat people are looking into it.
Oh, the same people that
they're trying to see CV. Like, okay, this bug is clearly like when it became unsafe, you can see all the thefts happening. But it's possible that it was already unsafe, just less unsafe. And so they're trying to see whether that was also compromised.
Okay, but that sounds like it's just speculation. There's no evidence for that. Or, okay, so presumably, or, you know, don't assume maybe, but it seemed safe at least initially, what was in the book at first.
Yes.
Okay.
It's safe-ish.
Go on.
But there you can already say like, okay, if you're recommending something in a book, maybe you want to put a really, really strong warning above it. I think there was a warning above it in very general terms, like when you generate random keys, be careful. But I think even above every command, you probably want to say, like, never use this. Because people, you know, go on Google and it's like, how do I make a Bitcoin wallet? And Google will just return some page in a book and you only look at the command and you don't look at the context and you type the command. So you cannot be aggressive enough in saying, don't use this. And especially if it's sitting right next to a command that uses Bitcoin Core, because that might give more of the idea. So
because I mean, there was a lot of Twitter drama around this, and I didn't read all of it. I guess one thing that I think Foscal mentioned in this context is that from his part, it was not intended to be a recommendation or anything like that.
Yeah, that's very possible. So it's possible that Andreas wrote the book. He found this other way to do it using Libitcoin, added it to the book as just an example. Wasn't expecting people to use this for a serious wallet. Eric Foscal, of course, wasn't writing that book, so he had no way to know. Now, what happened a bit later, and this is what has confused a few people, is that Libitcoin was changed. So the commands were moved around. So the original command was now different. And this change was not the thing that made it unsafe, basically. This was just a neutral change. It's just you have one command before, and now it's like you use a slightly different command.
For the same purpose?
For the same purpose. So the command bxseed now was something like sx new key. Like, it was just the same idea, just slightly different words to do the same thing.
Okay, wait. Okay, so the name... But was the current name already in the library as well?
No, so the library itself was changed. So what happened is this book was written based on an old version of the library. The library was changed. And then Eric went back to the book, basically, to the GitHub repository where the book is, because the book is open source, and basically changed all the commands to use the new version of the library.
Okay, so but that would mean that... Sorry, what was this part of the library code that this episode is about? Bxseed or something?
Yeah, bxseed, that's the command. So, and it was a slightly different command before.
Was bxseed in the library back in 2013, whatever?
No, it was at the time it's called SX new key, but it was the same thing. It's basically the same, essentially the same code, just with a different name. The library had a different name, the command had a different name, but it was doing the same thing.
And what was in the book?
It was using the original one, the SX new key.
Okay, yes. So but that was already insecure then, right?
Not as insecure as it is now.
I mean, I guess I don't understand.
No, so
why,
we started
but hopefully
when,
our listeners
when,
do.
When Andreas wrote the book initially in 2014, the command was probably secure, or at least not as insecure. Yeah?
Yes.
Then, so as far as we know, nothing was stolen back in those days. Then the library was changed, just the change of the commands. That did not change anything about the safety. That happened later. So what happened is, because the library was changed, Eric would go to the book and say, hey, this library has changed, please use these new commands now. And there was otherwise a completely neutral change, but I think some people interpreted it as if he added that library to the book himself, but it wasn't Eric adding the library to the book. Andreas did that in the original version. Eric was just saying, okay, if you're using my library, that's great, but it's changing, so use these new commands.
I guess my question, or what I'm trying to get at, and maybe you were answering something completely different, is why does this insecure code exist in the first place? What is it for? Why would that even be a thing?
Well, this happened later, right? Oh, so what happened later is...
You're getting there?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
great.
Another new version of the library came out, and that one made it unsafe. So the command didn't change. BXSeed was still BXSeed, but now suddenly it was changing. It was producing these 32-bit random things. So basically, you have a book that's pointing to a library, and people are using that command because everybody reads that book, you know, and then at some point, something changes in the library, and so new people who are newly in reading the book will actually do something that's unsafe, even though people who read the book 2 years earlier would have been fine, probably.
Hmm. Okay.
Because, the book doesn't control what's on the internet, so you
Right, I get that. Okay, yeah. That makes sense. Why does this insecure code exist? Or, I mean, maybe you don't have the answer. My question is basically, is there a good reason for this to exist? Potentially.
No. I mean, I think when that particular pseudo-random number generator was designed, is probably 20 years ago, I think people thought it was secure, and then security researchers found out it was not secure. And since then, you should just never use it.
So from what I understand, and of course you should correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that basically the only randomness, which is then obviously not random, was that it would only use like a timestamp.
Yeah, effectively, I think it uses a timestamp.
I guess at this point, we've discussed this before, so we don't need to get into detail exactly about all of this.
But I think it's a timestamp in milliseconds or in millions of a second, actually.
Yes, but that's the thing, right? So if you want to generate random numbers on the computer, the question is, how do you do that?
Yes.
And you usually use multiple inputs for that.
Including a timestamp.
Including a timestamp. Yep. But if you use only a timestamp, that's a problem because then people can just try every time.
Yeah, but I think in this case,
millisecond or whatever, and find, right?
Yes, but in this case, I don't think the problem was using a timestamp. The problem was only using 32 bits.
Okay, and that's not the same thing.
No matter what the 32 bits is, if the 32 bits is a timestamp, yeah, that's fine. But if the 32 bits was the name of your pet, it's still not enough. So it's about the amount of data that was being used. Now, the reason people were able to come up with the milksat thing is because if you set the time to zero, you can set your clock to zero, which is somewhere in 1970, then it will produce milksat. But it's not, you can't just hack somebody's wallet by guessing at what time they created it. You just have to guess every possible number.
So you have to do two things. You have to try every possible number and every possible time?
No, just try every possible number. And the fact that this number happens to represent a time, probably the time in milliseconds since, midnight or something like that, doesn't matter what it represents.
Okay, back to my question. I guess your answer was no, but is there a good reason for this 32-bit
code to exist?
No, you say no.
To exist somewhere in the universe. I mean, code has been written and people don't, always delete it. But if it's 2015 or whenever this change was made and you want to use some random number generator, you shouldn't use this.
Okay.
Now, you could say, and I think that was the argument, this function was never meant to be safe, so I was allowed to use a known bad library for this.
Yeah, so
I think that's not a safe way to do things, I think.
So again, for me, as a non-developer, I don't really understand how a library is written or used, why is this code in LibBitcoin in the first place? Is there a reasonable or feasible reason why it would even be there? That's sort of my question.
Presumably he just picked a way to make a random number from all the possibilities out there, and he picked a particularly bad one. Because he thought it wasn't important, so it didn't have to be secure, so anything that's kind of random was good enough.
Okay, so why would he think it's not that important? Is there...
Presumably because the intention of that function that he had in mind was that this function should never be used for a real wallet. It should be used on testnet. So on testnet, you can make a wallet that's perfectly unsafe, and as long as it's kind of random, it's good enough.
Okay, and right? It's easier to implement it that way or something
this
like...
This part I don't know, because there are probably very secure functions that are just as easy.
Okay.
But I don't know that. So it may have been some reason why, because I did look at the original change itself, why that change was made from something that was probably secure to something that's definitely not secure. And it had something to do with threat safety, which is completely unrelated to randomness. It's just a general thing in programming. So he's trying to fix a bug related to, I'd say, reliability of the software so that it doesn't crash. And in fixing that, he switched to a different random number generator, which presumably fixed the problem of reliability, just became unsafe.
Okay.
And again, not realizing that people were using this with real money.
Right. About that. So from what I understand, and I'm again, there's no reason for me to keep repeating this, but I don't know how to develop a wallet. I don't know what process you follow, but apparently at least somewhere it said, don't use this code for generating real money seeds or something. There was a warning.
It was
somewhere, right?
Pretty so, vague.
Vague, okay.
There was, I would say, a cryptic warning. I don't know the exact wording anymore. It did not say literally, like, never ever use this for a wallet. It said something indirect, which I guess if you understood what it means, you would have known not to use it.
Okay. Well, if you would... okay, I guess wouldn't anyone develop a wallet know what that means? Apparently not.
Anybody who is a wallet developer, but again, we're talking about people not who are wallet developers, but people who are just hand making their own keys. So there's a much bigger audience. So somebody, just some random dude of the internet, buys a hardware wallet, thinks like, yeah, I don't trust this Ledger company to generate a random number because maybe it's exactly the same type of bug. Right, maybe Ledger only makes 1 billion different keys and they know all of them. And one day they just rug pull everyone.
Right.
So if you're worried about that, it makes sense to generate your own key.
Would grab Mastering Bitcoin, flip open the page that has this Bitcoin seed, use that one instead of the Bitcoin Core one.
Yeah, or probably he would Google.
Okay, yeah.
Manually make Bitcoin wallet, and then probably Mastering Bitcoin shows up at the top, or Bitcoin shows at the top because other people link to it. And would use that command. Now, that is a bad process, so you can definitely blame the user. Like, don't just use commands from the internet.
Okay, I guess my real question was... So you said it was a fake warning, but my other question...
Vague warning, not a fake warning.
Yeah, fake. Yeah. Pronunciation. Where was this warning? Was it at least in the right place?
Arguably, no. I think it was in some part of the documentation, but not in... all parts of the documentation? I don't know. I haven't looked at it in that much
detail. What would have been the right way to do it, in your opinion? Where would it have been, or how?
I probably would have not called it seed, the command. I would have called it something like unsafe seed, just mm-hmm. to be completely clear that you cannot use this. But of course, the problem is maybe he was working on this and completely forgot that this thing was mentioned in Mastering Bitcoin and some other places. Because the safest thing to do is to really sabotage it. If you rename it to unsafe seed, then anybody reading the book will type seed and it will just say error. I don't know what you're talking about. This command doesn't exist. And then that would trigger somebody to do some reading, like, hey, why is this command removed? And then they would find maybe some more clear warning saying, you know, this command was used by some people, but you really shouldn't be using it.
Okay. And to be clear, wherever the warning was and however fake it may or may not have been, it definitely wasn't in Mastering Bitcoin. So someone who would...
No, exactly. I think Mastering Bitcoin said more something along the lines of, whenever you make your own keys, you have to be very careful what you're doing. But then immediately proceeds to suggest...
Okay. And also, to be clear, so you do agree with Foscal, because he tweeted this, is that basically any half-competent wallet developer would have known not to use it, or would have been clear
but
at
what,
least to...
What do you mean by wallet developer? There's like 10 wallet developers. People who actually make wallet software, maybe those people would know. But
I mean,
99%
I mean.
Of Bitcoin users are not wallet developers. They just make their own wallet.
I didn't make my own wallet. I just downloaded a wallet.
No, okay. But the pyramid is bigger, right? So at the top of the curve, you have Andrew Polstra. He does not only make his own wallet, he makes his own math that is used to make his own wallet.
Right.
Then you have people like, I don't know, Sipa, Peter Weiler, Andrew Chow, maybe myself. Like, I work on wallet software. No, we're not on the same level, but mm-hmm. You know, someone like me, I make wallets. At least I've made two in my life. I've worked on two in my life. So yeah, I should not make that mistake.
Right. So how deep?
Arguably,
how
someone
far
like
down?
Luke Dasher shouldn't make that mistake.
You don't have to name a name, I guess, or unless you want to. But how far down this pyramid do we need to go before, like, who's the target audience to fall victim
like I said,
to this problem, so to say?
Yeah, I would say
is
anybody
that an answerable
who
question?
Anybody who's paranoid enough to not trust the hardware wallets, and that's, you know, everyone who uses Bitcoin, who even uses a hardware wallet, and then everybody who feels confident enough to type some commands. Which is, you know, not everyone, but it's still a lot of people.
Okay.
Maybe not you.
I mean, I'm not going to do that, no.
No, but there are plenty of people who know how to type commands. Like, far, far more people know how to type commands than people who understand cryptography.
Oh, I mean, I've typed a command or two in my life, but I'm not going to type commands to generate seeds, no. I don't think so.
No, that's fine, but I can assure you there are plenty of people who will do that. So
right,
there's
okay.
A very large group of people, I think, who would very easily make that mistake.
Okay.
Now, how to prevent anyone from making that mistake? Like I said, you'd have to name the command something else and maybe even like force somebody to run a compiler or like put a bunch of barriers in place so people do not use it by mistake. I don't know where the responsibility of the library maker stops, right?
Yeah. Okay. I want to...
It's still open source. If you use it, it is at your own risk. So, but I don't agree with that statement. I think that's...
So it sounds to me like what your position is more or less the fact that this code exists is not necessarily a problem. Like that was my sort of first intuition. Why would this even exist at all?
Yeah, because somebody one day 20 years ago wrote it thinking it was safe.
Yeah, okay. So but that's not necessarily a problem. However, the fact that it was named seed and it wasn't, like, the warning wasn't clear enough. That's really...
No, I think the fact that LibBitcoin used it at all was not a good choice.
Okay, well, that's what I was saying, essentially. I mean, okay, that it exists in LibBitcoin, I should have said.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that it exists in the universe is fine. The fact that it exists in LibBitcoin, I find that hard to defend.
Okay.
Maybe there was a good reason for it, but I don't know.
Right, okay. I mean, so my best understanding...
But if you do use it as a LibBitcoin author, you should put, like, not just one, but, like, infinite warnings, like
right.
Never ever 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 use this.
I mean, my best understanding is that it used to be testing code or something along these lines, but in that case what you're saying, it was not labeled clearly and the warnings weren't clear enough, that's really the ultimate problem, but
none of this would have been a problem if Mastering Bitcoin didn't point to this, because there's plenty of libraries out there that are also unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody uses them because they're not mentioned in
so
some famous book. So it's a combination of circumstances, right?
Right. So then basically Andreas Antonopoulos is... I mean, I'm not into the blame game, but I...
No, it's a combination of factors.
He's at least partly responsible then, right?
I wouldn't say responsible. It's more like Murphy's Law. Like, you know, if only one thing goes wrong, then nobody gets hurt. But if like three things goes wrong, like, okay, it's in a popular book... And it's a library that's well known, and then something is changed in the library that people didn't really think about when they wrote the book, or even when they wrote the library. Some combination of things goes wrong, and people lose money.
Okay, that sounds like a very reasonable explanation.
And
to
then
me,
even a very small group of people lose money, right? People who are not expert enough to write really safe wallet software themselves, but expert enough to do something stupid.
Right. So this brings me to the next point, which I bring up. So it sounds to me, you don't think this was intentional, as some people have suggested or even claimed. You don't think this was an intentional attempt to steal money by the LibBitcoin developers. That's not what you think.
I don't think so. Would have been, I don't know, they could have stolen more if it was intentional.
Right.
Let's see... I mean, there's a couple of other factors here why I don't think it was intentional. So if I looked at one of the thefts that was listed in the article on milksat.info, and they list a bunch of transactions that were probably thefts. And then you can click on these transactions in your mempool explorer or whatever, and you can look at the input transactions. So every transaction, the theft has inputs, those are the victims, and then it has an output, which is the guy who stole it, presumably. And one of these transactions takes inputs from many, many different wallets. So they have addresses that are Back32, SegWit, basically, and they have all the way to legacy addresses. So I clicked on a bunch of these input addresses that looked old and looked at which ones are the oldest. And I found addresses that were funded in 2016. December 2016 was basically the first person who put money on that address. So basically people have been putting money on these addresses for years and years and years and years. But then the theft happens just a month ago. And that's interesting because it could have happened earlier, right? If it was a rug pull. Especially it could have happened in, I don't know, a bull market instead of a bear market. But I don't know. The other factor is that this theft is...
I think your logic here, if I understand it correctly...
Could have happened earlier. Or later.
Yes. But that doesn't prove intentionality or not, right?
It suggests that it's not intentional because the other factor I was going to mention is that about half a year ago, Ledger found this bug that was essentially identical minus like one little detail. And so to me, the most plausible explanation is that somebody read the Ledger explanation and just started thinking like, hey, are there any other wallets that use this Twister thing? And they would Google around looking for this Twister thing and they would probably find the Bitcoin code. And then they need a couple of months to figure out how to steal all that money in one go without...
Right. And on the other side of that argument, you would presume...
Because if it was deliberate, it could have happened before the Ledger incident.
Yeah, or at least you would do it immediately after, right? Because you would think, oh, someone's getting close.
Yeah, but probably you would have also taken the Ledger money.
Right.
But because you would have been like, huh, if I can make this backdoor, let's see who else does this by accident. Right?
Okay. You were going to bring up a second point?
And in general, like I think the timeline we just explained is pretty plausibly how something like this could happen by accident without any bad intention. I don't know what my second point was. I think I just mentioned...
Okay, well, I can bring up a counterpoint just to see what you think about it. So I think Lisa Nifty and I, she tweeted some sort of graph about how... development activity on Bitcoin stops basically immediately after something related to this happened. I don't remember what it was exactly. Do you?
Yeah, I think after the first exploit.
Okay.
So this is a case of, I think what she showed was a chart that looked at the commits on GitHub like around the time of this exploit. So this would have been mid-July. And I think they showed like 2 weeks of activity and then nothing. And then there's the saying called, when in doubt, zoom out. And if you look at Libbitcoin over a long period, so I did it on GitHub, if you look at it from, say, 2014 and onwards, you see that it was very active in 2014, maybe 2015. Then it was almost dead, but with occasional spikes in activity. So every 6 months or so, there'd be some activity. And so the fact that there was a recent burst in activity that stopped, I think it's a complete coincidence. Or at least it also fits the pattern. Like they don't do anything, and then for a couple of weeks we work on it, and then it stops again. And I think it was the last change. No, the bug was introduced much earlier, right?
Yeah. So
the fact that there happens to have been one burst of activity, I don't know. And they didn't introduce the vulnerability now.
Yeah.
So right. It can be causal because whatever the mistake was that was made, like we said, in 2016, the first people put their money on those addresses.
Okay, so you think that's perfectly fine explained by coincidence, if there is even.
Well, first of all, it fits the pattern of these bursts of activity, and second, it doesn't make sense timing-wise because the vulnerability was introduced in 2016 and not now. It was exploited now, but it was in place much earlier.
Okay. I guess, I mean, obviously I have no way of making any sort of reliable judgment on this. I would be kind of shocked if this was intentional. I've known Eric Foscow for so long.
I would also be disappointed in the sense that it was only $1 million. It's like,
right.
Really? 10 year career in Bitcoin and all you can do is 1 million? I'm not buying that.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But anyway, I from what I know is the one of the original victims, you know, one of the more sophisticated victims that realized what was going on and was able to reproduce it, filed a report with the FBI. So I'm sure somebody will try to figure out where that money went to. And then maybe one day we'll know who did it. But my guess is just some 16-year-old in his basement, read the Ledger post, did some digging, figured out how to do it from Libbitcoin, had to write some code to make sure he could do it all at once, because if you just steal it from one, people will pay attention on Twitter. Somebody will figure out what happened and will basically, you get this white knight effect where somebody will try to preemptively take the money, put it in a safe place, and then give it back to the original owners.
All right. What now? Are we at that point in the podcast, or is there something else?
Yeah, what now is very simple. I think the Mastering Bitcoin New Edition book will not recommend this particular tool. So that means that maybe people won't do it. And I think the tool itself has made some changes to make it a little bit more clear. I'm not sure.
I mean, I guess it would be good to rename the tool as you suggested.
Yeah, right? I personally, I would do something like rename the command so that anybody who's been using it, it will break for them. And then they can read the manual and think, do I really want to be using this? Or was this just a test that I was writing and it's fine, I'll just change the command. Because the problem is, of course, people will still read old editions of the book. So everybody, you know, some percentage of readers will think, oh, I'll use this. And you want to protect that percentage.
Right. Okay. I think, does that conclude our episode on Milksats, yours? Is there anything we left out? Is there anything you want to add? Any hot takes?
Yeah, so there was the other question of whether there have been other wallets with the exact same bug. This was raised on Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called by the time you're listening to this. There's a possibility that this particular bug was made, you know, by some other wallet, and not all the coins that were stolen were from Bitcoin related stuff. I think that's unlikely, because as we saw, as I said before, you had the Trust wallet that had essentially the same bug as this one, but every wallet, or it seems like every wallet, has its own fingerprint. So you start with this bad 32-bit randomness. And then you add your own fingerprint, which is slightly different for the Trust wallet than from Libbitcoin. And if you don't know this fingerprint, you're not able to steal the money. Right? So because otherwise the money from this situation would have been stolen half a year ago. So my guess is if there's another wallet that uses the same insecure way to generate random data, they probably also have a slightly different fingerprint, which means that their coins would not be stolen. And also, nobody was able to point to one. But it is possible, right? So the attacker stole coins that were protected by these insecure private keys, and it's possible that there were other wallet libraries out there that were generating the same keys. We just don't know which one.
Right, so we understand that Trust Wallet had a bug like this, but as far as we know, there is no other wallet implementation, no other wallet that uses that has the same problem. So it's basically Trust Wallet has a problem like this, and then independently it's guys that are slightly more technical than I am and use the command line.
Mm-hmm.
But there, we don't know of another wallet, but there might be, because there's no way to tell on the blockchain.
There could be. However, you know, wallets are often open source, so you would simply Google all the source code out there for somebody using the same Twister random number generator. Maybe, but there could be some closed source wallet out there that, you know, uses the same thing.
We would have presumably heard it by now, don't you think? It's almost a week ago since this CVE, or since this became public.
So I don't know from who we would hear that. From whoever got their...
People on GitHub or Twitter or Reddit, I don't know.
If there was another...
You're a well-connected guy, Shores.
If it was another open source wallet doing the exact same thing, so not just using the same random number generator, but also using it in a certain way, right? Because there was a difference in the way that the Trust wallet used it and the way that the Libbitcoin stuff used it, then I guess, yeah, we would have known about that. But we wouldn't know about a closed source wallet. So you can't rule it out. Doesn't seem very likely, though.
Okay. I think that's it. What's the moral of the story?
Be careful out there. So, thank you for listening to Bitcoin
Explained.
Bitcoin Amsterdam was the biggest European Bitcoin event in history, held from October 12th to the 14th, offering 6 different on-site locations and 3 fully programmed stages. We are absolutely stoked to catapult the European community to the global stage. Tickets are at their lowest prices right now. Lock yours in at b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. That's b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. Over the last 5 years, the Bitcoin Conference has become the world's largest gathering of Bitcoiners. From breaking announcements and international media coverage to countless meaningful talks by thought leaders and industry innovators, we are excited to continue our drive for global hyper-Bitcoinization. From July 25th to the 27th, 2024, we'll be taking the Bitcoin Conference to the city of Music and Freedom, Nashville, Tennessee. Join thousands of attendees for countless opportunities to learn, engage, and network across 3 days of pure Bitcoin signal. Get your tickets now for the best price at b.tc/conference. You are not going to want to miss what Nashville has in store. Introducing the Gatekeepers Issue, the Q1 2023 print release from Bitcoin Magazine. The winter editorial serves as both a reminder of the sacrifice whistleblowers have made in the pursuit of truth and the call to arms for a new generation. Order it now from bitcoinmagazine.com. There is a thin line between curation and censorship. There is an even thinner line between moderation and constitutional violation. The Gatekeepers Issue explores the liminal space between these nuances, painting the fences worthy of demolition and those deserving respect. Bitcoin Magazine is for all Bitcoiners, the curious, convicted, and the maximalists. Subscribe today for exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Don't miss out on this piece of Bitcoin history. Subscribe now at store.bitcoinmagazine.com.